The other critical thing that people don't do is something called cost of doing business. And what that is a calculation around what it costs you to get up in the morning. There are calculators online, CODB or cost of doing business. And what that does is when you have the negotiation with the person whose kid is working at Countdown, you know in your head that you're not just making up a number out of unicorn dust, that it's a real number. And that's really good. That's really empowering.
Hello everyone and welcome to Canon Conversations, the show where I sit down with some of the top creatives in the industry so that you can become a better photographer. Today, we're going to be talking all about the business of photography, which as creatives is an area that a lot of us I feel quite uncomfortable with, but it's extremely important if we're wanting to turn our hobby into a career. And to talk all through this topic with us, we have a commercial food photographer, Nick Tresetha. Nick T.
Thanks
for joining me.
My name is hard to spell.
All good. So well, Nick T.
Yeah, much easier.
Thanks for joining me, man.
Pleasure.
All good. For anyone at home who doesn't know you and your brand and your name, I know, shock.
Surely not.
Would you mind giving us a little bit of a rundown on you and your brand and your work?
Yeah, my brand is Nick T because my surname's pretty unspellable, Tresetha. And I've been shooting for about 30 years now, which makes me feel very old. And over time, I've sort of specialized more and more in food. I was a very early adopter of digital, which was very scary. But it's very mature technology now, which is great. And of course, now that's all these other changes happening. I mean, our industry has changed so much, of course. And now it's changing almost every year. And we've got to keep up. But I've got a studio here. It's my prop collection out the back behind me. And I really love what I do. I really like food, like cooking, like eating. And it's going pretty well.
Nice. And how did you land on food photography specifically?
I think you just over time, when you're starting out, you pretty much take on anything. You fairly quickly work out that you're not good at some things. I'm a useless landscape photographer. I'm a useless fashion photographer. So you kind of slowly over time narrow it down. And then I think to be a good photographer, you need to be interested in your subject and knowledgeable of your subject. And I like food and cooking. So it kind of made sense for me to flow into that.
Cool. And do you want to give us a bit of a rundown on sort of the kind of work you do, your clients, what the sort of daily life of your studio looks like?
It's pretty much, I'm probably 90% studio. Occasionally I do get a client saying, can you come out to our cheese factory and shoot people making cheese, which is great, which I love the change of that. But the studio is just all about having clients having a really nice experience during the day. We look after them with coffee and lunch and stuff. And most of my work is probably packaging, which is pretty specialized. And it's not particularly vulnerable to somebody's next door neighbor or mate doing it, because there's a fair bit at stake with packaging, as you can imagine. If you're going to print 5 million cans of beans, you need that image right. And also the photography becomes a fairly small component of the overall job, which means it's not as price driven. Whereas if you want to charge somebody is running a restaurant, probably not making any money anyway, those guys, you become very expensive very quickly. So they go, oh, maybe I'll do it myself. So, but my industry, not so much, quite specialized.
Yeah. Cool. And so today we're going to be talking about the business side of photography.
Yes.
And why do you think that is such an area that trips a lot of photographers up?
I think people get so excited. I still love taking photos. I still love creating images. And people get so excited about creating those beautiful images. It's just no fun to be thinking about. And people don't think of themselves as business people. They're like, I'm a photographer, I might be an artist, I'm a creative. And they don't really want to be that guy or girl that is paperwork driven. But the flip side of that is that if you don't have that stuff under control, it can really mess things up. It can damage relationships with clients, and it can damage your very life. I've got untold stories of people who have gotten to really awful situations through not having paperwork. I think when I first kind of worked, I used to work without paperwork when I very first started, because I didn't know any better. And when I first thought, oh, I'm going to have to put some paperwork in place, I was really worried that clients would be really turned off by that. But it was the opposite. Clients are like, oh, here's a guy who's professional and organized. Great, love it. It's actually a good thing. It's not a bad thing. So. Yeah.
Totally. No, I think the idea of scaring off potential clients is something that, you know, photographers and creatives do worry about.
Yeah.
You know, you do start off by wanting to make a cool thing, take a cool photograph, and eventually people want to start paying for it. And when that happens, you don't want that to change, and it's
you don't want to lose that nice relationship that you have. And I'm friends with a lot of my clients. You know, that's our relationship. It's not a very formal relationship. But then, you know, you go and watch a movie on iTunes, and you agree to their terms and conditions, all 38 pages that none of us have ever read. Or you hire a car, or you fly on a plane, or you even go into a supermarket. You're subject to their terms and conditions. It's normal.
Mm. Totally. And so, should we start sort of at the beginning of the process in terms of like finding the client? How do you go about finding clients, you know, acquiring new clients, even working to keep your existing clients happy? How does that whole process work for you?
Finding clients is, for me, mostly referrals. Mm-hmm. I don't do a lot of cold calling. I probably should do more of that sort of stuff. But it's pretty much referrals. I've got quite a small client base, and they're pretty loyal.
Yeah.
So probably more relevant to what you just asked was keeping those clients.
Yeah.
You can't afford to just go, oh, it's a little job, I won't bother. You know, every job's got to be up to standard. I mean, people are quite resistant to change. It takes quite a bit for a client to go, okay, I'm not using that guy anymore because he's stuffed up something.
Yeah.
And if you do make a mistake, you own your own mistakes and you fix it.
Yeah.
And, you know, clients, I don't want to put any stress on my client. That's my job to be good for them.
Mm.
I give them champagne at Christmas. That's probably my biggest marketing tool.
Yeah.
But I think you retain clients by being consistent, by being reasonably good at what you do, and by not stuffing things up.
Yeah. I think what you were saying before about the idea of no one likes change, and that's why it's easier to sort of keep existing clients. But it's also the reverse of that, is it'd be harder to acquire new clients because you being a new contractor is change, and that is scary. And
I think there is a maxim that says your most valuable clients are the ones you already have, not the one you might have. Mm. Because if you stop looking after this person and start worrying about acquiring that person down there, you're not giving this person the love that they need as an existing client. So they're really, you know, client is king in my world. Mm-hmm. And if I have an assistant here, that's one of the first things I tell them, you know, watch the client.
Mm.
Client's king.
Yeah. And so say you're one of your existing clients calls you up and asks you, we need this X job done. How much is it going to cost? And they ask you to sort of just throw a number out over the phone. How do you approach that?
That's my rabid rule. Never, ever do that. It is such a disaster for a variety of reasons.
Mm.
The first and foremost is that if I give you a number, $1,000 to do something, that's it. That's now the official budget that will be written down, that will be shared with their boss, with the people they work with. Mm. Everybody's now saying $1,000. Doesn't matter what the job is, how the job changes, that's the budget.
Yeah.
You can't then come back and go, oh, I didn't realize you wanted a horse and carriage in the shot. I have to charge you another $500. Can't do it.
Mm.
So verbal quotes are just an absolute no-no.
Yeah.
And I've had people on the phone, you know, driving along, somebody's like, oh, look, just give me just a rough idea, mate. Mm. Come on, I just need a rough idea. I just got to get it, you know, by 4 o'clock today because I've got to tell my client. And you're like, if you've left it so late, how disorganized are you as a client? And I'm just like, no, when I get to point A, I'll jump on the laptop, send me an email with what you need, and I'll do your written quote.
Mm.
And that's, I have never broken that rule in 20 years, and it's saved my bacon so many times.
Yeah. And so how do you go around pricing a job and making sure you're thinking of all the variables and making sure you're not missing anything out?
Well, first thing I say to people is often, you know, your phone rings. You might want to think about not answering it if you don't know who that is, because they're going to put you potentially in that pressure situation.
Yeah.
Oh, give me an estimate. So if by asking them to wait, you give yourself a chance to do some research. Go and look at their website.
Mm-hmm.
Go and look at what they've historically been doing. Is it any good? Is it, you know, hugely produced stuff that's going to require a lot of budget, or is it minimal? You can, as a photographer, you can pretty much look at something and go, oh yeah, that's some handheld, or that's shot on an iPhone.
Mm.
So that gives you a chance to do some research. I've obviously been doing this a while, but when you're starting out, pricing is really difficult. Mm. I don't believe that people starting out should price any less than the person they're competing with. Doesn't matter if that person's been doing it for 20 years. If you're capable of executing the same job, then you should be charging the same.
Yeah.
And as a someone who's been doing this a while, I don't want some young guy obviously coming into the market and stuffing it up by charging too little.
Yeah.
Not just because that affects me, but it affects him too, it affects the whole industry. So yeah, you find pricing by talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
Some industries, it's fairly transparent. If you're a wedding and portrait person, you can look at other websites and a lot of them publish their prices so you can see it and get an idea. But trust me, good clients don't want the cheapest. They need somebody in the zone, but they also need somebody that's competent.
Yeah. And why do you think the pricing is such a taboo subject for photographers?
Well, it's a Kiwi thing, partly. I mean, in America, it's totally not, you know, and I was reading a thing the other day and somebody said, oh, you're such a, in LA, to an English guy, oh, you're such a great actor. And he said, oh, no, really, I'm not. And they said, oh, are you not any good? You know, it's sort of America then. I think Kiwis really struggle. Yeah. And that goes back to the business thing. It's these, and you name a number to a client, potentially you say $500 to do something. And the guy, you can see them thinking, oh, my son works in Countdown and he doesn't get $500 a week. And you're wanting to get $500 for an hour's work? You know, so there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
People think we charge enormous amounts of money for doing very little, which is unfair. There's some education involved. You have to educate your client into how you got to this point of being able to create this beautiful image for them.
Yeah.
And it's not as simple as point and shoot.
Yeah. Is there a way of photographers earlier on, and because obviously the idea of what you charge, you figure it out over time as you do jobs, as you work with clients, you figure out that over time. Is there a way of younger, more up and coming photographers to speed up that process of figuring out what both they're worth, what is industry standard for the particular niche they're getting into? How are, you know, is there a way to speed up that
process? There are. I mean, there's a couple of photography associations around. Mm-hmm. Both of them have pricing examples on their websites that they will share, and they have mentoring schemes. And you can ring photographers. If you're if you're wanting to be a sports photographer, go and find out who's ring and ring them up and ask them what they're charging. Most of them will tell you, you'd be surprised. The other critical thing that people don't do is something called cost of doing business. And what that is a calculation around what it costs you to get up in the morning. And there are calculators online, CODB or cost of doing business. You punch in all your expenses, including ones that you may not be paying at the moment. For example, if you're still living at home and you build a business based on not paying rent, the moment you get kicked out of home or you have to move out, your business plan falls apart. So you must, even though you don't have those expenses currently, you put those in the calculator. And what that does, and then you know, that can rent, new camera gear, new laptop every 2 years, all of these things, phone bill, so on, insurance. And then you put into the system, well, you know, realistically, how many days a week am I going to shoot? Three, maybe. Three is quite busy, actually. And how many days holiday do I want a year? A couple of weeks, maybe. And what do I want to earn? 50 grand, 100 grand? I don't know. And that will spit out a number at the bottom that says, if you charge less than X, you are losing money. And you'd be surprised at that number. That number will, in my experience, with almost any photographer, it's $1,000. And it's like, whoa. And what that does is when you have the negotiation with the person whose kid is working at Countdown, you know in your head that you're not just making up a number out of unicorn dust, that it's a real number. And that's really good. That's really empowering.
Absolutely. And now to talk a little bit about negotiating with clients, how do you go about working, and especially earlier on in your career, like obviously now you've got your small sort of select group of sort of more loyal clients, but in those earlier days, how did you go about negotiating on price and sticking firm to, you know, what you felt you were worth?
Well, once you've got that cost of doing business thing in place, that's given you a bit of a baseline, and you know if they're asking you to work for less than that, it's effectively costing you money. So that's a good place to start from. You can ask client what their budget is, and clients will often tell you. And if you think, if a client comes back and says, I've got $100, you might want to think twice. You're never going to be able to get down to $100. The other thing is, if you, let's say you quote $2,000 to do something, client says, oh, can you do it for less? And you go, okay, $1,000. Client's like, what? So $1,000 was the actual price all along, and you were trying to rip me off with $2,000. So when you're thinking, well, how nice of me to discount, you just made yourself look like an idiot. So if you are going to come back from your initial price that you thought was fair, there's got to be a return, a quid pro quo from the client. And it might be they pay you up front, might be they pay you 7 days, it might be they give you some free merch, but there must be some compensation. Otherwise, how come you suddenly were able to drop your price without anything else changing?
Yeah, and I think that that attitude comes from the not knowing the cost of doing business, and you're just pulling, and it's like, look, if I'm either getting this job or I'm not, I might as well take a grand rather than 2 grand.
Exactly. You know, and I understand that. I understand that thought process, but then you should have quoted a grand in the first place, you know. You might think, well, maybe I'm better off spending that day working on my editing skills or editing my portfolio on my website or whatever. It's certainly not easy. But again, ask around, talk to people. You'd be surprised. You know, go and see seminars, listen to online streams of people talking about it. There's a website called Wonderful Machine, which is US based, and they post up jobs that people do with the details redacted. I mean, they're insane, the costs that get put through in big American ad campaigns, but it's all data. The other thing to take into account is usage. So how are your images being used? And we'll circle back to this because it's a very important part of paperwork. Yes, if a client just wants to take a quarter page ad in the local newspaper versus a billboard campaign, their expectations of price are going to be different. And how you resource that shoot is going to be different. You might say, oh, it's just a little ad in the paper. I'll just run out and do it handheld daylight. But, oh, it's a campaign across New Zealand, billboards, Ambien, bus packs, whatever. Okay, I'm going to bring an assistant and a bunch of lights and maybe some actors and so on and so forth. So knowing how the image is going to be used definitely affects how you would price it, and it should.
Yeah, because it affects the stakes, which affects the risk, which affects the everything.
And you don't want your sort of cheap and cheerful image that you did for too little on the back of a bus.
Because your name's attached to that. Absolutely. And what would you say to the photographers who are nervous around turning away clients? Like, say they do the cost of business thing and they come up with this number that at first scares them because it's quite high. And what do you say to the photographers who are worried about turning away potential clients? Like, we talked earlier about new clients are hard to find. And and stuff. So like, what's that sort of, there's obviously a fear around like you putting out a number and then it's going, psh, nah, sorry mate, all good, see you later. When you actually would be, when you kind of need the job, or, you know, what's the sort of...
Well, first off, what's the difference? You know, let's in your hypothetical example, what's the difference between if your number is 1,000, if the client's number is 200, your pulse bar. If it's 900, you can make that work. You know, give me a carton of beer that that we're photographing or something. The problem is if it's 500, say, and you go, oh, okay, I'll do it because I need the work. That's it. You're now stuck at 500. And even 5 years down the track, he comes back to you or she comes back to you. You can't go, I'm now a grand because I've decided I want to try and actually live in a house instead of a tent. They're like, but it was 500 before. We'll go and use someone else. So it's very hard to push your prices up if you've come in that low. And you'll get stuck at those levels. And that's why there's such a huge turnover in this industry, because people are building non-sustainable businesses. And you see it in lots of industries. You see it in hospitality, where cafes will sell a dish at less than it costs them to make it. And they don't realize because they haven't done the calculations and they go bust. So, and lots of photographers do that too.
Do you have any techniques that you've built up along the way to massage clients into the, you know?
I think you've got to explain why they are paying top dollar. I'm not above explaining that I've got a studio and lights and gear. That is part of the equation. This is part of what you get. Also look to value add on shoots. I'll say, well, how about we add some video into this at a decent rate? You know, we might bring a video assistant and grab some behind the scenes stuff, or how about we shoot the main shot and then we shoot some extra ones for social around it to add value to the shoot. And you're charging for all that, but you've got to come up with an offering that resonates with the client.
And so how have you sort of built up your sort of add-ons list over the years, and how has that sort of helped to you know, add to your business outside of
shooting for social has definitely been a thing. Obviously, if you've got something that's designed for an ad, it's super valuated for client to say, hey, look, here's some images for social that support this, but not for free. Yeah. You must be charging for those.
Yeah.
Clients might say, oh, I don't need anything for social. Say, I'll tell you what I'll do. And I don't mind doing spec when it's to the side of the main job. Yeah. I don't want to do the whole job on spec, but I will say, well, how about I just grab some anyway and I'll put them in front of you. Mm. Nice big watermark, pop them up on the website and they go, oh, that's a cool shot of the back of the camera. I really like that. Can we use that? Yeah, sure. Here's how much. Mm. How about we shoot some video? So over the past few years, as videos really exploded into the photography side of things, I don't know, ever since Vincent LeFlore did his thing with the 5D2. How long ago was that? 6 years ago or something? Something like
if
that.
If not more.
Yeah, maybe. I would start saying to clients, hey, how about we shoot some video as well? And they go, oh, no, we don't need video. And I go, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And I'll put it in front of you. And 90% of the time they go, oh, that's so cool. I love it. And if you can find ways to do that where it's not costing you a fortune, I'm not suggesting you bring a crew in at your own expense. That's super value added for client.
Yeah, exactly. And because there's videos and there's videos, you know, there's like how long is a piece of string?
And you know, client's job is they don't know what a video could look like. They don't know how awesome that splash could be or that beautiful lighting or that camera move. They don't know, and it's not their job to know. So sometimes I think we have to be more proactive and show and tell. That's show them what we can do. Hey, look, I'm taking your very ordinary looking product and made it look fab by doing this amazing camera move.
Yeah, totally. And it's a thing, like we're in 2020, if your client doesn't realize that video is a value add, there's some education in there.
Well, and again, that's your job as well. You know, and if client doesn't really get social, maybe you could show them their competitors. I mean, you can pitch for jobs. This is what people forget. It's not as simple as saying it's X dollars. You know, if the client is spending some money, put together a little treatment for them, a little pitch document saying, hey, look, I've got this great idea. Here's an example of one of your competitors and here's something nice they're doing. We could do that as well, but better or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, pitch for the, get them involved in the process.
Do you have some kind of like formula or like sort of set amount of hours set aside sort of in your business to work on spec stuff and things like that? Is, you know, have you sort of defined that
or no, is it just it should be defined, I think, especially when you're starting. I mean, because I've got a pretty solid business now, it's not a big issue, but I think when you're starting, you need to put it in your diary. Tuesday afternoon is social media afternoon or whatever it is. Wednesday morning is doing test shots of this thing that I want to do, or trying out some new clever lighting or a camera rig or something like that. I'd sort of do that organically, I test cameras and play with things. But I think when you're starting out, get it in the diary, especially if you're not that busy, you know, rather than sitting on your ass looking at cool memes, actually say, I know what I'm going to do. I saw this really cool camera move. I wonder if I can learn how to do that. Watch it on YouTube, whatever. Yeah. And that's just self-improvement, you know.
Absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally. And to talk a little bit about now around sort of researching and learning your clients and how you can use that to inform like the kinds of work you do for them, pitch to them, how to work with them. Like how do you go about researching your clients and how do you suggest other people go around researching their clients?
Well, I don't want to sound like a stalker, but you know, I do stalk my clients in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
So obviously first port of call is going to be their website. And then you're going to look at their LinkedIn. You might see where they've worked before from LinkedIn, look at their social feeds, get an idea for who they are and what they're into. It's amazing what you can actually legitimately find out about people.
Yeah.
I live or die by my contacts, my address book. There's maybe 3,500 addresses in there. And if my phone rings and I don't know the number, I know it's not an existing client. I know it's not a supplier. I know it's not a friend. So it's somebody new. So often I won't answer that because I want to just have some time to work out who they are and find out about them so that I'm not wasting my time or their time. And if they're looking for something completely different to what I offer, there's no point in us having a long to and fro. So research is so important. And you can find out, you can look at a client's online presence and go, oh, okay, these guys are wanting to do something really cool. Or they're wanting something budget.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with doing something budget if that's defined. And again, this is a paperwork thing when we talk about defining the usage.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about copyright?
Cool. So let's talk a little bit now about copyright usage, all that sort of stuff, and how that sort of is worked into the structure of your business and how you do your work.
Okay, copyright. Mm. We touched on this earlier. Mm. This is a big thing that people don't understand, is that in New Zealand law,
mm.
there's a thing called the commissioning rule.
Mm.
And it means that if I commission you to take a photo, the moment you press the shutter, I own the copyright. Not you, the photographer, but me, the client.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible, terrible situation to be in as a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
It means that the client can then on-sell your work to third parties. They can do what they want with it. In fact, you can't even use your own images in your mm-hmm. website until they give you approval. It's a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to do this. But there is a way out of it, and it's a really simple way, and it's a contract
mm-hmm.
that you send with your quote. Terms and conditions, it's paperwork,
mm.
and it basically contracts out of that. It's all perfectly legal. It's all been written by lawyers. It's mm. all solid. There's case law behind it. Mm. It's solid as and legit as.
Yeah.
And this, again, is why you don't do verbal quotes and mm-hmm. you don't accept verbal commissions.
Yeah.
So all you need to do is send your client an email saying, hey, Steve, thanks so much for your email. Here's a quote for the job, subject to terms and conditions. And you can link them to those.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an A4 sheet of terms and conditions, which if no one's doing paper invoices, but if you were, it would be on the back. If mm-hmm. it's a PDF, it's page 2.
Yeah.
And they set out the terms and conditions. They stop it being a commission, which means you get the copyright.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for photographers who've been working already without any of this, they go, well, I can't suddenly turn around to my clients mm-hmm. and go, you can't use your images how you want. And I get that. So what you do is you say to your existing clients, oh, I've just tightening up things a bit. I'm now using these terms and conditions, and here's the form around copyright. You can still do what you want with the images
mm-hmm.
if that's what you've previously had. And then over time, you can transition it mm-hmm. into more structure, and it's a great negotiator, because when Steve comes to you and says, oh, I've only got $500
mm-hmm.
because it's only for an ad in the local courier, you go, no problem, I can do it for that. I'll make that work for you, Steve.
Yeah.
Terms and conditions. 1 year license, New Zealand only, Eastern Courier, one insertion. Oh, Steve might go if Steve's less an honest person. Oh, does this mean I can't use it in a billboard? No, you can't, Steve, because as you just said, you've only got this little budget. So maybe not quite as rude as that, but it opens the door for those sorts of conversations. So if you've been giving people unlimited usage, which if you haven't got any paperwork, that's what you've been doing because you've been giving them copyright, then you're going to need to transition them into paperwork.
Yeah.
The paperwork is really important. It protects you. It could protect your livelihood. It could protect you from, if you own a house, well done.
Mm.
It could stop you losing that house in a lawsuit. But the paperwork is really only there to protect you if things go a bit pear-shaped.
Mm.
It's not there to hit clients over the head with, because that's not a good way to have a client relationship. Mm. Absolutely important. I make that a line in the sand. We'll not do anything without paperwork. And, you know, I had a long time ago, prior to me using paperwork, I literally had a guy knock on my door at the studio and say, oh, how are you, Nick Trist? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I'm serving you to appear in the High Court as a hostile witness. I'm like, oh, shit. Honestly, it was scary. I could have lost my house.
Mm.
I had to get lawyers involved. It was a complicated story, but it all related to not having that paperwork.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
And that then neatly flows into the whole negotiation thing.
Mm.
Like, people say, oh, we've only got this much budget.
Mm.
Like, but you're doing bus packs and you're wrapping a building with this image and you're doing this, that, and the other. Have you got budget or haven't you?
Yeah.
And where did that budget conversation come from? Did you just wake up one morning and go, oh, I've got this budget?
Yeah.
You don't go into your mechanics and say, hey, bud, I think my gearbox is flogged out.
Mm.
I've only got $300. The mechanic's going to be like, well, I don't know where you got that budget from, mate, but it's not going to do it, you know.
Mm.
So, yes, that is so critical. And that goes back to that whole written quote thing. And then suddenly, instead of client just having a text from you, hey, bro, $300, thumbs up, they get three pages.
Mm.
You know, emailed through with your letterhead on it, with your logo, all laid out, the parameters of the job are spelt out very clearly, so everybody's in agreement with what we're doing. maybe a little cover letter around your treatment. This is how I plan on shooting it. We could go to Bethel's Beach to do it, whatever you're doing. And suddenly they're like, whoa, here's somebody who's onto it. And that paperwork, first couple of times you do it, it's a bit of work, but then it's just templated.
Yeah.
And you'll just, you know, copy and change the details. So it's not onerous at all.
Yeah. And because I think like a lot of like creatives and photographers are scared by that process and think it will bog down the relationship with the client. But like you're saying, it does make you seem more professional. It is, there is an element of, you know, flashy, impressing them with your organizational skills and your professionalism.
And that way your quote visually looks the same as your invoice. You know, it's all the same branding. I read a fair bit about things called touch points, which is basically every tiny communication you have with your client via text, phone call, email, your website, your branding. Yeah, those are all touch points. And you want to get those all consistent and up to a good level. You know, so don't be sending bung texts to your clients. You know, you want to be operating at a consistent level that suits your client. I mean, sure, if your clients are musicians, then you can send them bung texts because that's probably what they're all about. But, you know, be really, you got to be consistently on message the whole time. And the quoting is one critical part of that.
Yeah.
And don't forget, a lot of your clients, they have to get your quote approved by someone else. So they're putting this in front of their boss. It's not necessarily just that person making the decision. So their boss is like, oh, well, you, that guy, he obviously knows what he's doing. And it's not always about the cheapest person because you know, you can't compete with on price. You literally cannot compete on price because you're competing with free.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that trips people up is they think, oh, I know, I'll cut another $200 off and that'll get me the job. It's like, no, because this guy here will do it for free because he thinks it's going to build his business.
Yeah.
He's mistaken, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah. Do you have any advice to photographers who do do think about doing jobs for free and stuff, and do you feel like there is a place for doing jobs for free?
I think there is. If you feel like you're not being ripped off, if you've got paperwork that defines how that's being used, you don't want to do band photos of your mates and then suddenly it turns out, you know, she's Lord and she's putting it on her album covers. But that's paperwork. The paperwork just specifies this is a test shoot only to be used in Facebook one time, whatever it is. So all of that, take all that sort of vagueness out of the equation. If you can see yourself getting maybe access, if you're a fashion guy, to some amazing model that's coming in, which they're very hard to get access to, or if it might get you into a particular restaurant that you've been wanting to get into, or get you access to the All Blacks, or something like that. It's got to be a benefit for you. And you've got to control those images. Really important when you're doing stuff for free. And the way I suggest people do that, especially when your mates ask you, can you do some photos of our band or my friend skateboarding for Skateboard Magazine, whatever, we've got no money. Sure, it's for Skateboard Magazine only, one use. Do them a quote with all your numbers in it. Total of $2,000, discount, 100%. Suddenly, your mate with a skateboard goes, oh, Steve did a $2,000 shoot for nothing. How awesome is that? Rather than, I got some free photos. It's a different conversation. And that works.
Absolutely.
And the way to do that, if you think that's odd to do that for Steve, your mate, just have an invisible friend. Just say, oh, my accountant makes me pull up a quote for every job, whether it's free or not. Sorry, weird business thing. Got to do it. But that's your processes, and that's really simple processes. Do it on the freebie jobs. I couldn't, you know, that is so important. They're often the ones that go wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I guess, like, to finish us off now, a lot of these processes and contracts and things are for the worst case scenario all the time. What would you say to a lot of the creatives and photographers who are like, I don't really want to think about the worst case scenario. I just want to, like, it's just a quick job. I'll just do it.
Well, some of it is, it's not all worst case scenario. I mean, there are things in there about last minute cancellations, about jobs not being up to scratch and stuff, which shouldn't really happen. But there's also stuff in there about, I will get paid. You agree to pay me for doing this. Simple stuff like that, which is quite important. So it's not all doom and gloom. A lot of it's just really simple. And don't forget, without the paperwork, you've got no copyright. You lose it. And they don't have to pay you. They've got the copyright anyway. They can do what they want. You can take it to small claims if you want. Meanwhile, they're profiting off your images. So if you want to take images and be paid for it, you must have the paperwork. It's kind of non-negotiable. yeah, I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. Well, I think that's a great place to finish on. And hopefully people at home have learned something and will start to take some of these learnings into solidifying their own business, or take them to move into, you know, earning money from their photography in a safe and sustainable way moving forward. Nick, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, pleasure. I just want us all to be successful image creators, whatever we are. And there's lots of resources out there. Canon are very good about putting on these seminars and stuff. So, you know, clue yourself up, get on the paperwork trail, and then put it to the side and concentrate on taking photos.
Fantastic. Exactly. Cool. Awesome. Alrighty. Well, that's going to do us. And we'll see you guys next time.
Awesome.
Peace.
Thanks, cool. Ben.
Awesome.